Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Here we are in the middle of May, recording on Thursday, May the 15th. I'm one of your co-hosts, Vlad Sedler. I'm joined by my man, Booms, Jason Anthony. Jason, what is cracking, my man?
What up, Vlad? It feels like it's been forever, even though it's been 2 weeks. I missed you last week, but as always, you find one heck of a fill-in with this Mr. Mager last week. Love listening to you guys, but excited to talk some baseball here, middle of May, getting towards the summer months and the dog days. And, you know, really, the fantasy teams are kind of settling and showing who they are right now. And we were just talking offline about how we're doing. And the standings might not be where we want, but I think you can tell if the team's going to be good or not the rest of the year, or how much work you have to do.
It's true. There are a lot of teams. We may look at our squads and just see a lot of underperforming players. And I'm not just talking about, I don't know, the Michael Confortos or Max Muncy's of the world. Like, you may have drafted Julio Rodriguez in the first round, and it just kind of off to that slow start, you're seeing everybody like Jorge Polanco and other guys on that team going off, and you're looking at box scores and wondering, where's Julio? What's happening with Julio? It's, you know, I'm not getting points for amazing defensive catches. Listen, that's usually how he starts. Julio Rodriguez will be just fine. Again, the caveat is always so long as they stay healthy, but the numbers will be there come year end. It's the constant ebb and flow. And listen, we always overreact to something that would have occurred in the first several weeks of the season, as opposed to if it happened in the middle of the season.
Yeah, and if you're complaining about Julio's slow start, you haven't paid attention to his career trends, because this is basically a good start to the year for him. He's been terrible the first couple months, but he always comes back strong. You know, it's tough with someone like that because they do have to stay healthy, because if they start off bad and then get injured, you're in a lot of trouble. I think I have a main team that's doing pretty good. I think it's in third with Vlad, Corey Seager, and Josh Lowe. You know, so three out of my first five hitters, really. I mean, Vlad hasn't been terrible, but he hasn't produced what you'd expect from your first round pick. Like you said, you got the bones for it, and you know these guys back of the baseball card, if they stay healthy, are going to be really good. You kind of project that and how to fill in around them.
I was just looking at the top five on the player rate, or top value of fantasy players through the early part of the season. Of course, Rasball has a great player rater. I'm looking here at the FanGraphs one, and man, just the incredible production from Aaron Judge is just out of this world. I mean, his ribs and runs are in the 40s. Like, no one's really even close, to that combined production. Got the homers, hitting over 400, like 412 last I looked. Here and earning over $50 in like a standard 12 team, or where nobody else is even above 40. And I'm thinking to like, man, it's kind of a bummer when your main teams, you're at the mercy of KDS. And granted, I'm not complaining. I ended up with a lot of Carol Tatis and Kyle Tucker. Obviously not complaining, but like, I'm looking, and every time Aaron Judge goes off or Ellie De La Cruz goes off, like, those things are happening on like my Gladiator teams from December. It's just like kind of a bummer where, you know, you don't get to share in that joy when a great player goes off because you didn't draw that slot.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things that attracts both you and I to the auction. So anybody listening, if you haven't done an auction, especially a live auction in Vegas, there's nothing better. Cause if you want Aaron Judge, you're not at the mercy of KDS. You're at the mercy of the bidding at the table. And if you want him, go that extra dollar. Both Vlad and I had the chance in our ultimate. Neither one of us got him, but Vlad's pivot was pretty good, I believe, with Tatis and Tucker in that league. Was that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well done. It's pretty funny. You look at the Judge hitting over 400, and I was watching the Athletics game, and you know, the race to 400, you have Aaron Judge and our boy Jacob Wilson. Talk about two different profiles.
Oh my God. Listen, one lesson I learned this weekend is I'm not sitting that dude for anybody. Like, we don't usually sit Stephen Kwan, right? And that's a very similar player. Like, unless you are just, you know, flush with amazing batting, your 12 team league, you've got 11 points in batting average, and you know, you're up there in runs and all you really need is power. I can understand maybe you're popping in like a Tyler O'Neill or somebody and sitting a Kwan. But I learned a hard lesson. I sat Jacob Wilson against the Dodgers, and listen, matchup doesn't matter for this guy. He is a legit contact hitter. He's now the leadoff man for the A's. Maybe Lawrence Butler gets the job back. You know, Lawrence Butler will be fine at some point. Like, I have no worries about that. But Jacob Wilson has really solidified himself as guys like him, Kwan, Luis Arraez. These are guys that have just about as many walks as strikeouts, and these are, it's just incredible. Like, just a different type of animal, not always the best for fantasy, but man, he went off against the Dodgers, and that just stinks. I'm never benching him again.
Yeah. Especially now that he's leading off. When he was batting ninth, there was an argument too, in the certain matchups and amount of at bats he's going to get, but I don't even know if it's an indictment on Lawrence Butler. It's how good that Jacob Wilson has been getting on base. He doesn't strike out at all. I think he's at a 4% strikeout rate, 3% strikeout rate, something like that. And the sneaky power. I mean, I think you and I would both be happy if he only had two homers this year, but he's got well above that. And he doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon. Now, the 400 talk's ridiculous, but he has a legit chance to win a batting title this year. And where the draft capital is, I'm really mad at myself. I don't have more because he was somebody I identified, and I tried to play the ADP game instead of getting your guys. And kudos to you for getting him in our big league.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Jacob Wilson also was what was it that we were really concerned about? It was the power. I feel like it was the fact that, hey, this guy is going to, kind of be like Arraez or Kwan and just be like a low power guy. I don't think we all had a feeling that the Sacramento Park was going to play well, the A's offense would be nice, and it was worth investing in. And yeah, everything is 2020, all the hindsight, but just thinking back to like a guy that was going like 250 overall, like he started to climb up draft boards over those last couple of weeks. But like, those are the type of opportunities where it's just missing one little piece. And if you just kind of put the strings together, you can see how somebody can be so profitable for you.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was all batting order. And, as much as I like the A's offense, nobody knew Tyler Soderstrom was going to be a monster. I like Soderstrom a lot, but that lineup got really deep, really quick. Miguel Andujar now is playing third base and mashing for them. Kind of 1 through 8. I mean, Luis Urias, even came back from the dead and he's been producing for them. So yeah, 1 through 9, that Athletics lineup has been incredible good. So that was the only thing that held me back. I'm kicking myself, don't have more of them. And like I said, great strategy in the auction to kind of solidify your batting average going $2 on him when he was usually going near the reserve round or $1. So that was a really shrewd play by yourself in that.
So I wrote the gut feelings article, usually comes out on Wednesdays. I'm just like checking in on batting orders, lineups, some trends and things like that. But, one thing that really stood out to me is and something I missed out on was Willier Abreu and how impressive he's been. I think we all had an idea, and the market did as well, that Alex Bregman was just going to be a really good fit in Boston. I still want to find that clip from our preseason podcast where I said people are going to forget that Bregman was ever on the Astros because he's going to be so good on the Red Sox. At least I think I said that on a pod. But
as long as you're saying it now, you said it before, Vlad. I got you.
but Willier Abreu, he's right there with him statistically. He actually has the highest isolated power on the team. He's tied with Bregman in home runs. He's just been really, really good. And so I'm marking these things as I go throughout the season and just remembering like how we are really our own biggest enemies through this whole, preseason draft research process, where sometimes we might just cross off a guy based on bias and not really looking at the straight facts. Like I feel like there's sometimes there are players that we aren't into. And then when we end up not drafting them, not targeting and not drafting them, we keep pushing them, to the side or convincing ourselves, hey, this guy is going to be a bust or it's not going to work out. We start, forgetting about the logic and just going towards that argument because it just, makes sense for us based on how we're drafting.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how much the research we do in the off season holds through all the noise in spring training. It's amazing how often we get off guys in spring training. And, you know, Abreu, I can give us a little leeway because of the weird illness he had. And he wasn't going to start the season and then was and then wasn't, on top of the platoon issues. But that bat was electric. And, you know, if he got the playing time, he was going to be good. And, man, I wish I had some more of him. I got him in a bunch of OCs, but that's about it. Really missed out in the mains. And, you know, in those 15-team leagues, as we know, the difference is when you're chasing at bats, with injuries, not kind of having a mysterious illness, like I said, and then not playing against lefties, at least to start the year. And even now, it was a profile I got off, and man, is he good. You know, another similar guy to that was, you know, our boy, Jung Hoo Lee, had that back issue in spring training at the end, and guy I wanted everywhere and didn't get hardly any. And again, now I'm kicking myself again, all the research and you get that noise, you pivot off. I think a lesson for me is pitching much more, listen to the noise in spring training, and hitting kind of maybe quiet it down a little bit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The Giants, you know, what do you think about them moving Willy Adames down to the sixth hole? Cause I think he homered right away, pretty much, the very first game that he was set there. Giants trying to, kind of spark things. Feels like the only consistent guy on that team. Quite the surprise has been Mike Yastrzemski at the top of the lineup, because even Wilmer Flores has quieted down.
Oh, shocking that Wilmer wasn't going to hit 400 with 40 homers this year. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that lineup's been pretty good top to bottom. They go through their struggles. Chapman and Adames, Ramos, they're all kind of swing and miss guys. But owning a lot of Adames, I'm not excited for him to go down to sixth, but maybe it's a wake-up call, and hopefully they can get him back up to second. The reason I liked him in the year, he was going to play every day. He's going to run when he's not hitting. The power will play in San Francisco once he starts to hit a little bit. So I'm not really concerned about him. The strikeout rate's in line. It's just pressing a little bit. And, you know, the lineup's good. The Giants are good. I mean, there are no Dodgers, no Diamondbacks, and probably no Padres, but that NL West is legit. And you throw the Paste Eaters in there, and then you've got a really good division. The Colorado Paste Eaters, for those of you listening.
Yes. Even I got that, and I'm the slowest one here. You know, it's funny. I think MLB managers emulate fantasy baseball managers, because in the case there with Willy Adames, they moved him down to sixth in the lineup to kind of motivate him, just like we would for, you know, like our second round pick who might be struggling. We put him into the utility spot, you know, just to try to get him going, get more out of him.
Well, if you ever want to get a guy going, just bench him. He's guaranteed to hit homer on your bench. We all know that.
Yes. That and Josh Lowe, the specialist. And of course, he was activated a day earlier than we thought. Of course, he hit a home run. Of course, we're going to put him in the lineup this weekend against Miami for these beautiful matchups. And then he's going to go for like 0 for 12. You know how it works.
Never fails.
Never fails. We're going to talk some pitching today. A lot of starting pitchers coming back. Before we do, I wanted to ask you really quick, thinking back to one thing we said about the Detroit Tigers, and it was true how awful and boring that lineup looked. And when they lost Matt Vierling and Parker Meadows in the preseason, we're like, man, this lineup is disgusting. They're the best. They have the best record in baseball. They have been a top three or four offense. Overall, they're getting amazing renaissance performances from the likes of Zach McKinstry and Javier Baez and Spencer Torkelson. How long does this magic last? Obviously, the pitching is phenomenal. But what are your thoughts about the Tigers throughout the rest of the season with the makeup of this this current roster?
You know, I think the hitting's going to be good. It's not going to be great, but they are getting some players back in Matt Vierling, and Parker Meadows is actually throwing now, so he's not a long ways away. The lineup's going to get deeper. The Javi Baez renaissance has been just so much fun. I mean, that's when you just enjoy baseball, because that's a guy that just – he's fun to watch, and it's really good to see him playing. You know, Torkelson, it's not surprising that he's producing this way. I mean, the pedigree was immense. Number one overall pick. The guy knows how to play baseball. Sometimes it takes people longer than others. I think that's going to continue. Gleyber Torres having a career year outside of New York without all the pressure. The lineup's good. They're not great, but they're not a lot of easy outs. And we got our boy Dylan Dirk Dingler, taking the majority of bats at catcher too, with all the, you know, he's got a lot of power in that bat. And with the rotation being as good as it is, the hole is the end of the bullpen, but AJ Hinch has kind of found a way to kind of maximize that by playing matchups, and it's been maddening as a fantasy owner, but it's been pretty successful so far. So, you know, we forget they made the playoffs last year. And they have Tarik Skubal. He's pretty good.
Yeah, the whole rotation has been pretty nice. It's been going well. By the way, the Kansas City Royals, best rotation in the American League. They've allowed the least amount of runs in the American League. They've been doing really, really well. So that boring-ass AL Central is got some value in real-life baseball.
Have the Royals got an outfielder hit yet this year? I mean, that might be the worst outfield ever constructed.
It's really bad. Other thing I noted through my research for the article was that Hunter Renfro is basically the worst hitter in baseball. Like, he's got to be close to being DFA'd, you would think. I think he's making $4.5 million or something this year. But like a 36 WRC plus. Michael Massey actually has the second worst WRC plus. The only guy worse than them, believe it or not, the worst hitter in baseball among qualified guys, is Milwaukee's Joey Ortiz.
Yeah, that's surprising. But Chris Taylor might have something to say if he gets enough at bats.
which will never happen, of course. let's talk some pitching here. There are a lot of guys that are coming back. We should be really excited about, both from a perspective of guys we've been stashing on our bench who are stars coming back to our starting lineup, and of course some guys that we are going to spend some money on in Fab. But let's start with my Dodgers. It's a discussion that we can have every single week. I'm sure real life Dodger baseball podcasts are talking about this all the time. But break it down a little bit. What's going on here with the crazy Dodgers rotation?
Man, it's hard to keep track of if you're not like a Dodgers fan or really watching fantasy. It feels like it's Yamamoto and others. Tony Gonsolin came back and has looked excellent. He had two pretty soft starts to start the year, or matchups. He's really pitched well. He was a guy I was really interested in, and I got him in one league. But did not get him, and I did not spend enough in Fab. But they have a lot of guys coming back, including a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw. He's going to be back on Saturday to make his debut. I'm assuming this is going to be his last season. Would be nice to see him get a ring. Nice another ring. Nice to see him stay healthy and make it through. Of course, I'm not betting on that, but now that they moved him up from Sunday to Saturday, he will be available in Fab. So we'll see how that goes. Roki Sasaki, my Achilles heel, he is going to the IL. He's got shoulder impingement. He's going to be shut down from throwing for a bit here, and his velocity has been down. So that is that's definitely one of me. Not taking a full L for the year, but when it was Vlad the gut one, the market zero back in when he signed with the Dodgers, and I called that. Now it's the market 10 Vlad one. So they're crushing me. I'm taking a huge L on that.
But you got the W on Hyesung Kim, so so you got your wins and losses.
That's right. Tyler Glasnow, he's playing some catch, but there really is no timeline for his return. He just had a meeting with Dr. L, as we call him, Dr. L Atrach. Is it Atrache? I really that's embarrassing.
He's like, yeah, we should know that, but he's a pretty famous elbow doctor, so close enough.
Yeah, I'll edit this later. Blake Snell back to throwing. He probably will be back sometime in early June, I would guess. Glasnow, even though there is no timetable, I'm going to say mid June. Of course, with him, you never know. And then, with the whole Ben Kasperius thing, that really kind of stinks, especially those that spent a lot of money on him. Obviously, I think he could do a great job in the rotation, but he's moved back to middle relief. He's not really going to get that opportunity. And then Landon Knack now is reportedly going to operate as the number five. So those that have been able to get him on the cheap over the last week are hopefully going to enjoy the fruits of that labor.
Yeah. he, you know, I got dropped, got picked up, got dropped, you know, what is he? And so I was a good kind of guess to pick him up. I know he had a guaranteed start this week, but it looked like he was going to be going back in the AAA. You know, guy with a lot of skills that the Dodgers don't seem to be in love with, his K rate, his K minus walk, all of the metrics looked really good last year and into this year, and hasn't pitched great yet, but good arm there. So it's really, the owners are gonna be pretty happy about that. I think, and I don't want to have a hot take here, but I would be worried about Roki pitching much this year. The Dodgers feel like they might use this year to acclimate him kind of to American culture, get his arm healthy. They might bring him back in kind of a bullpen role. I don't know how they're going to use him, but the lights have looked really bright, and, you know, expecting this kid to kind of come up in October and be a big arm for them, I would be concerned as a Dodger fan, which I'm obviously not. The Dodgers might be in a little trouble overall with these pitchers, just, you know, these high upside electric arms. You know, if they can't stay healthy at the wrong time, obviously they won a World Series last year without much in the starting rotation. But what they put together, the odds of them being healthy in October, it seems pretty slim. So I'll be fascinated to kind of watch this team as they get towards the playoffs, who's healthy, who's not, because they either can be a juggernaut or, you know, throw them bullpen games in game three of a playoff series.
You know who's perfect for them? When the Orioles, if they continue to stink, they should get Grayson Rodriguez, because they need another guy on the 60-day IL, the Dodgers.
Yeah, and maybe even Shane McClanahan.
It's perfect. Match made in heaven. By the way, Dustin May, we've talked about it. I mean, how many innings over 100 is he even going to get, considering he hasn't gone triple digits in, I mean, I don't know, since high school or something like that. So that's another concern.
Yeah, and, you know, Kershaw, we know he's not going to, you know, throw 25 starts the rest of the year. So it'll be interesting how they fill it off. They still have a lot of good arms. You know, they've ran through a couple of them. They brought up one of their top prospects. I forget his name, that got rocked, a lefty. I don't know if you remember who that was, but with Kasperius.
Robleski?
Yeah, Robleski. He's supposed to be a pretty good, safe arm moving up. So they do have guys, but are they ready for the bright lights, I guess, is the question, because they will be in the playoffs. It's just a matter of how far can they go.
Another team that right now is under 500, definitely underperforming, at least per expectations, and they're actually one of the worst offensive teams in the league, believe it or not, the Milwaukee Brewers, at least as far as, yeah, I'm looking at Statcast metrics like team barrel rate, things like that. Like outside of Rhys Hoskins, I mean, this team is really light on the barrels. And they continue to have this, they have a very similar situation to the Dodgers, where they just have this musical chairs of starters, and they have a laundry list of injured relievers. Like, remember Robert Gasser? I mean, this guy was the man. DL Hall was supposed to be a stud. Aaron Ashby, I mean, those are, you know, three strong lefties right there. At some point, Ashby's already, he could be back sometime soon from a strained oblique. But you know what's really funny about this rotation? The one man that keeps standing is Chad Patrick, who, you know, had a really nice start to the, you know, once he joined the rotation a few weeks ago. And then every week it's like, oh, he's just got one more start because this guy's coming back. Oh, just one more start, this guy's coming back. But every week he gets another start because either somebody's not ready or someone else goes down. Now you've got Jose Quintana on the IL with a shoulder injury. Brandon Woodruff was about to come back, and now he's got an ankle ailment. There's always something there. And then, you know, I don't necessarily think Aaron Civale is going to come back and save this rotation.
Yeah, it's interesting because they have a lot of arms that are kind of middling, and then they have a lot of high impact arms coming up. You know, Logan Henderson looks like he belongs. The K numbers are there. Great changeup. And then they have another kid coming up. I call him the Miz. Jacob Mizorowski was watching his start, 103 mile an hour fastball on a strikeout yesterday. I don't know if that's a good sign for his arm, but he's 6'8", real tall, lanky guy, and he has just maximized. His biggest issue was the walks, but he has figured those out. His last 30 days in the minors, 5 starts, 28 and 2/3 innings pitched, 38 Ks, 1.88 ERA, and a 0.91 whip. He has nothing left to prove in AAA, and I would I would guess they would be up in the rotation sooner than later, as well as Logan Henderson sticking. That's a pretty good trio with Freddie Peralta. And then, you know, who else they can figure it out with. Woodruff, it'll be interesting if he can come back from that injury.
Yeah. I mean, and Woodruff, I mean, he was ready to go. He was going to pitch actually this past weekend. Now he's got this like ankle ailment. It just kind of reminds me of the Spencer Strider thing, right? Like Spencer Strider was good to go. He came back a little bit, then something else hampered him. So I hope Woodruff's going to be okay. He hasn't pitched obviously in a couple of years, but there's always somebody in this rotation. Like by the time someone else goes down, then Jose Quintana will be back up. And obviously he was pretty solid. Nestor Cortez will eventually be back as well, dealing with a strained elbow flexor since early April. But Logan Henderson looks like you said it. He's probably going to stick around. Not available in really many main events. Only 7% available in main events, but more closer to 80% available in 12-team OCs. He lines up for. What do they have here coming up here? He's going to get the Orioles at home and then a couple more, another single start after that and then a two-step after that. But I think he's probably going to stick in the rotation. And by the way, Tobias Myers is back. He was just sent down as soon as he was. Quintana got injured, and now Myers is back in the rotation. Probably will get some bids in a 15-teamer as he's going to be facing the Pirates next week in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I was a little surprised. I probably most people were that Myers got sent down last week. I didn't think he was the next guy to go, but he got sent down. So he's obviously on a short leash. And so if he can pitch well against the Pirates, might be worth a stab if he is available.
Now, this is interesting. The Minnesota Twins have demoted Simeon Woods Richardson. The wheels are in motion. We've been waiting for David Festa or Zebby Matthews to stick in the rotation. And baseball, the Garoto gods continue to mess with us, surprise us. It did look like David Festa was going to be that next guy because Zebby Matthews, and I wouldn't say he was struggling in the minors, but he wasn't reaching five innings in his last few starts while Festa was dealing, just absolutely dealing. And Festa dealt in the majors in his couple starts that he made. Now David Festa is dealing with some arm fatigue, supposed to make a start this weekend, but it's going to be in the minors. And with Simeon Woods Richardson being demoted, it is Zebby time. Zebby's going to start on Sunday and probably stick in the rotation. He is, again, like Logan Henderson, rostered in just about every league in main events, but I think he's going to be pretty popular in 12-teamers.
Yeah, Zebby's calling card was the control, kind of a George Kirby clone last year, but all of a sudden, beginning of this year in the offseason, he added about 2 miles an hour to his fastball. He's throwing 97, 98, and was getting some swing and miss. That has kind of waned entering the season. He's lost a little bit of velocity and a little bit of swing and miss, but really excited to have him come up. I have him stashed on one of the teams. I think he could be really good, but we do have the troll lurking in the dark. That's Rocco Baldelli to mess with us and pull Zebby at 4 2/3 innings pitch because he's going to the third time of the lineup. So, as much as it's going to be exciting for him, I'm tempering my expectations. And while we're talking about the Twins, a shout out to Chris Paddock. He looks like the sheriff back when he was with the Padres a couple years ago. He is dealing. He looks like he's back and fully healthy.
Yeah, Chris Paddock is back. Javier Baez is back. Trent Grisham is back. Patrick Corbin is back, although I wouldn't quite call it that. He was facing the Rockies. And, it was the 1 week I feel like most of us were confident in, like, hey, maybe we should bid on Patrick Corbin here in a 15-teamer because I'm looking at all these starters. I'm not feeling very comfortable with it. And then you've got Corbin, who's been decent enough, but now he gets the road Rockies with this team probably going to be a heavy favorite. And honestly, I thought $8 to $14 would get it done. And even that couldn't get it done in my leagues. Like Patrick Corbin went for more. And just for that start alone with the 9Ks, it was worth it. I don't know how long it'll last, but that was kind of a gimme there.
Yeah, I actually picked up Corbin earlier the year for a two-step and ended up dropping him. But, he's been really good. He's kind of turned back the clock. And, when I say really good, I'll go really good for Patrick Corbin. No ace or anything, but it's been very usable in a league where you need 7 starters or 8 starters, depending on how many relievers you're going in a 15-team league. Very, very usable.
The Sacramento Athletics. They've got Gunnar Hoglund. It didn't do as good as against the Dodgers you would expect, but he's the guy that might get sent down here because JT Ginn is about to be back. Ginn's been out with an elbow injury. He made a rehab start on Wednesday. It went pretty well. It was just a little over three innings. He faced 14 batters, gave up three hits, no runs, five strikeouts. And apparently that's the only start he's going to need because right now he's penciled into the A's rotation. Coming in on Monday, they're going to face the Angels. Lots of strikeouts there potentially. And then obviously the Phillies, a tough matchup in Sacramento. But JT Ginn is coming back. Any interest him on for him on your radar in 15 teamers as a long-term play?
Yeah, I was actually all over him when he first got called up. Made some improvements strikeout-wise in the minors. I had picked him up in multiple leagues before the injury and did not pitch great. Was not terrible, but then had the elbow issue. I ended up dropping him. You know, I actually think Gunnar Hoglund is going to stick around. He survived that Dodger start, which a lot of people can't do. And I'm looking at Oswaldo Beto. And I think that his Ginn is going to take his spot. He got lit up by the Dodgers today. He's almost got a six ERA with a whip over 1.6. Hoglund is one of their, you know, top two prospects. Now I don't think they're going to play games with him, and he has looked like he's belonged in the first three starts in the majors.
Yeah. I kind of like what the A's management, you know, front office been doing. They're obviously franchise ownership's a different story, but definitely not being managed like the Twins are being managed or the Rockies. I mean, like, this is, you know, they're leaving Nick Kurtz up there, not messing with him, letting him get going. You know, he will at some point. Making good moves. And that would make sense. I mean, a guy like Gunnar Hoglund, you know, what's the point of even keeping him down? He does seem to be major league ready. And might as well keep him up there. Oswaldo Beto, that's actually been kind of surprising that he has been so bad. But there really is something to be said about this ballpark. It's going to get even worse in the summer. You've talked about it a lot on previous episodes. But, like, I mean, you look at Severino splits, I mean, at home versus the road. And Severino was speaking specifically. Our guy Jake Kuchek brought it up, an article from MLB.com, how Severino is talking about how hard it is to get in a rhythm at home because the clubhouse where he would usually go and rest between innings or whatever is by the bullpen out in the outfield. And so he has to, like, hang out with the bullpen and just kind of get off of his flow, and it really throws him off. So he's got like a 5+ ERA at home. He's crushing it on the road. It's going to be a really tough park for pitchers this summer. And I think it's something we need to be careful from a fantasy perspective.
And it hasn't even got hot here in Northern California, so it's going to be very interesting. I know their schedule was really front-loaded with home games, so they're going to be on the road a decent amount. But I have a lot of A's pitchers, unfortunately, with Hoglund, with Severino. Hopefully get some Ginn shares. I'm scared. Any home matchup, it feels like, you know, it's pretty comparable to Great American Small Park, I would say, as far as starting that pitcher and the confidence level in the ballpark and how easy it is to get blown up pretty quickly there. So there's going to be some risky starts and some big numbers. When you see the over under at 11 every game, you know there's going to be some runs scored.
Yeah, and the other, I think, an element of this that isn't often spoken about is when it's part of a two-start week, you have a pitcher that you see is, whether it's an ace pitcher or not, has one of those starts in Sacramento. That can really damage your ratios already. If your ratios are already in trouble, it's scary. Like right now, I'm looking at like a Will Warren, for example. He's got two gems. He had two gems in a row. And the next week, if he pitches two, the second start's going to be at Colorado. And I understand, you know, if, against the Rockies isn't as tough, but of course Rockies can put up runs there, at least the top of their lineup there. And so it's something to consider if your ratios are really bad. And I mean, I think most people are going to start Will Warren for two, and that's at Coors. And the Rockies aren't even close to an offense that the A's are. So if somebody's, you know, got a two-step where it's at Sacramento, it's going to be tough. I feel like it's something that deserves a second look from us.
Yeah, it's so difficult to bench two start guys at home. It's almost like, what are we doing? You know, it's kind of like the Yusei Kikuchi this week. He's got the Dodgers and the Padres, but that's on the road. You know, that's an SP4 for you. And I had a hard time with that. And I think I benched him in one place and started him in another. So these two starts are so valuable. These wins are so valuable. Obviously, if you get two starts in a week, your chances for a win goes way up. The strikeouts, you know, Mike Megger talks about this all the time. Usually leagues come down to one or two strikeouts. So if you're leaving 6-7 strikeouts on the bench throughout a week, you know, you're protecting your ratios, but man, you're giving up a lot. So it's going to put us in some really tough choices this summer, and I'm excited to make them, but hopefully we make them right.
I always think back to being, you know, bullied, and I use this with air quotes, with Scott Jenstedt. I think I first heard it from him in like 2006 or something. I asked him, "Hey, I'm thinking about, or hey, you know, should I start or sit this guy? He's got a tough two start week." He goes, "Well, if you're not going to play him, you might as well drop him." And he's been saying that for years. It's really funny. And I hear a lot of people just like, "Oh, I don't know if I can start this two start, you know, guy." And you're taking on some risk anyway. Like if you've got Nick Pivetta and one of his starts is at Coors, and granted, you know, the two start he had that didn't go well at Coors, you still kind of got to go there. Like, what, you know, why are you rostering these guys if you're not going to play your studs, you know, where one of the matchups is tough? And this is not me going against what I said earlier with the A's. I think that's a really dangerous, you know, Sacramento in the summer is going to be real dangerous. But that's for your like borderline guys. We're not talking about ace.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably the top five starters on my team. I'm kind of starting blindly on a two start unless it's really severe. Once I'm trying to fill out the roster with my back two starters, that's when it's for me becoming very questionable if I'm going that two start. Like even JT Ginn, if I had him next week with home against the Angels, home against the Phillies, it seems like a pretty good week. It's questionable. A guy coming off the IL only threw a couple innings in his rehab start. Is he going to get enough innings against the Angels to get that win? And then when he gets to the Phillies, can he even make it through five and survive that start? So, mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of question marks that, you know, this is what makes fantasy baseball fun, to do the research, make the decision, and hopefully make the right one.
Yeah, it's funny. Ryan Weathers, my advice, I think many others' advice was like, hey, this week, let's see, it's at Wrigley. We don't know what the wind situation is going on. He was, you know, limited. What not going to pitch more than 60, 65 pitches. And he may want to sit him, wait a week, even though he's been great in the minor. What does he do? Go out there and throws a gem against them. So again, it's all crazy. You just never know what's going to happen week to week with player to player.
Well, you talked Ryan Weathers. I know this will probably be in the fab, but let's talk about him for a second. How do you view that with someone that looks electric like that, was a spring training darling, but he's on the Marlins, which severely limits his opportunity to get wins. What does that do for your bidding for him? Does that temper it, you know, down to, you know, whether it's the low triple digits, or is that just an arm that you want on your squad? Do you look at that team dependent? Is that kind of a hard rule if it's a bad, you know, team that the guy is not going to win much? So how does that affect your bidding?
It shouldn't, because I feel like the market drives the price, and in 15 teamers, like any pitcher with a pulse with talent is valuable and is going to go for, you know, at least 100. And I mean, listen, we've been, you know, I went after Sean Burke to start, and I feel like the White Sox are much worse. Shane Smith has been solid, you know, bad pitchers. I mean, good pitchers can get wins on bad teams. They just got to, you know, hopefully their pen can get them over the hump if they're limiting the damage. But no, I think it's fine. I mean, you know, Max Meyer was quite popular, and he's, you know, he was fine. I mean, it doesn't really impact me, at least in 15 teamers and 12s. Maybe I would be a little bit more careful, but I don't know. Weather's going to be, he's going to be popular in main events based on, you know, his preseason injury. I mean, he was only drafted on a third of teams anyway. So he's coming into this Sunday and coming off that start on the Cubs as a hot commodity. He was only drafted in one third of leagues, which means he's available in a whole bunch. And, you know, he's going to be going for a lot of money, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, for me, I kind of fall for that banana tailpipe, the Sandy Alcantara. It's those bad teams that just, they can kill you with the wins. It's so hard to get wins already for me. And it just, it seems like such a struggle. And, you know, you're just, it almost cutting your win chances in half on those terrible teams with the White Sox, the Rockies, the Marlins. And as much as I like the arm, I'm leaning towards tempering expectations unless I really need some strikeouts in Fab this week.
Would you say I'm crazy if I think that I don't really hate this Marlins offense, at least not like, you know, some of the other teams? I mean, Kyle Stowers really starting to look like the real deal. I mean, Connor Norby's coming into his own. Jesus Sanchez hasn't really gotten going. Xavier Edwards at the top. I call him Javier. It's funny. You know, Derek Hill, Augustin Ramirez. Like, I know I just said a bunch of like whatever names, but I don't know. I know it's not the best team, but I think the Pirates, for example, are a lot worse offense than the Marlins are.
Well, to answer your question, you are crazy, and not because of that. You're just crazy, and I love you for it. But yes, you are crazy for saying that because the Marlins offense is atrocious. They have Matt Mervis, you know, batting cleanup, sitting about .180 now. They're getting better. And, you know, the Orioles general manager just has to be loving getting, Trevor Rogers for Norby and Stowers. Great trade, Baltimore, I feel so bad for that fan base, but those two guys are legit MLB starters. There's a good top four with Augustin Ramirez adding on to that. But the Marlins, I would rather be the Pirates. I would than the Marlins as far as the lineup.
The Braves, by the way, they're getting Spencer Strider back. And as we put this outline together, the question was who, you know, now that AJ Smith-Shawver has really established himself, like four straight amazing starts, it's like, who's going to be the guy sent down? I mean, just based on our biases, right? I'm speaking for all of us. Like when you consider Bryce Elder versus Grant Holmes, of course, you're gonna be like, hey, why would you put Grant Holmes, back in the bullpen when it's, come on, man, it's Bryce Elder. Guess what? Bryce Elder has carried pitched 5 to 6 innings consistently and has pitched to a 3 ERA over his last 5 starts. And there was word that maybe it's Grant Holmes was going to be the guy that's moving to the bullpen. I mean, after all, Grant Holmes got like an 11% walk rate compared to Elder's like 7.5%. And so this was a question that we were going to discuss today, like who should be demoted when Strider comes back. Well, the decision has been made for us, like in the last hour. The option has been made. Bryce Elder was optioned to AAA. It only had one option left, but back down he goes, and it looks like Grant Holmes is going to stick around.
And I think for the Braves, long term, and making a playoff run this year, that makes more sense with the upside of Holmes versus Elder. But they're going to need Elder at some point again. I don't know for who, but we know. He's going to be needed in the rotation again sometime soon, but excited to get Strider back. Little concerning that his velocity dropped after about the 4th inning of the Sim game. This is an interesting, maybe it's a topic for another day, but I'll broach it right now. My buddy August and I were talking, and he basically posed a question. If a pitcher's spring training is either missed or delayed, what are the odds that they get hurt during the season? And we went through it, and only a couple pitchers we can remember from the last 2 years. And it was last year with Sonny Gray, and I believe it was Zach Wheeler who started the season a little late, did not get hurt. But anybody that misses spring training or ramps up late, they almost seem like they ramp up too quick, and they get injured at some point in the season. So maybe that's something to look at next year for me, and I can back test it a little more in the off season. If a guy in spring training is dinged, that might be just a complete avoid for me. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It makes logical sense. If I'm not mistaken, I think even Kevin Gausman may have defied that. He pretty much pitched almost a full year last year. It wasn't as good.
Understatement.
As usual seasons. But yeah, you're right. I mean, in general, I agree. I think obviously Spencer Strider was a bit of a unicorn in that sense, because for a lot of people, it was hard to ignore that helium. It was like, or the FOMO even. It's like, oh my gosh, Spencer Strider, I got to take him. Like, what if he does stay healthy? We start right thinking that way.
Yeah, I'm guilty of it. I have him in a couple big places, but you even look at somebody like a Sean Manea, that he injured his oblique coming back, you know, or he injured something. Was an oblique? He had an injury, yeah. And then he re-injured something else, ramping up.
I don't remember what the first one was,
but it wasn't an arm, so I was in on him. But these guys, and it's the kinetic chain, right? It's not always the arm that's a re-injury. Like Strider got a hamstring injury, and I don't know how he injures those things, Quadzilla. But yeah, it's just these guys. It's spring training is a long process for these guys to get their arm ready, and I don't think they take the proper amount of time when they're trying to get back once the season's going.
Yeah, makes sense to me. It's always something to consider. Usually it's baked into the market price, drink, I said baked in, but also it's just different when it's like a star player, right? Like we want a piece of that. We got the FOMO. It's like, we want to go after him. Speaking of that, the safest guy in fantasy baseball, second round pick, Logan Gilbert, of the Mariners. He's expected back probably next week, they say. And then George Kirby as well. That's going to be a nice little double shot in the arm for this Mariners rotation. But at the same time, Bryce Miller, man, it's been brutal. He's been dealing with elbow inflammation. He had a cortisone shot a couple days ago. He's been dealing with back problems, but he's now on the IL. So what are your thoughts here with this Mariners rotation? Who do you like better, by the way, rest of the year between Kirby and Gilbert? Like who's more likely to stay healthy rest of the year?
I would like to say Gilbert, but I would probably lean Kirby just because of his lack of an injury history. Although Gilbert's been really healthy his whole career too, but the way Kirby's been able to ramp up from this previous injury, it might be that situation I was just referring to where Gilbert's rushing back. If I had to guess, put money on it, I would bet George Kirby, but I'm not optimistic. I'm actually very hopeful for both because I have multiple shares of Gilbert and Kirby, so I'm excited to get them both back in my lineup for however long they can stay healthy.
The Giants, everyone's on Carson Wisenhunt watch, the top pitching prospect for them. Hayden Birdsong's kind of moving in the other direction. Mike Mager, he didn't just allude to it. He pretty much said it. He said, "Hey, go ahead and drop Hayden Birdsong." He said so in Drops and Disasters last week up on FTN. I did not listen personally, even though I usually agree with Mike on everything. It was just hard to let go. It's almost, you know, like personal. I was like, let me see another week. Maybe something happens. And, you know, I don't know, Jordan Hicks and Justin Verlander run into each other in the bullpen and, you know, blow their knees out and Birdsong gets in. But even then, he's moving in the wrong direction. You got Kyle Harrison also hanging out in the bullpen. Meanwhile, Wisenhunt, who is supposed to be behind them in development, and obviously he's the one guy in the minors still, he's been amazing. Over his last three starts, just one walk to 21 strikeouts. So I know you like all your guys. You should be proud of all these wonderful Giant starters. And I know you know both you and I got some Harrison shares recently, but where are you with how this is going to shake up rest of the year?
Yeah, I'm very interested. I have a hard time believing they're going to put Kyle Harrison in a one inning middle relief role. So I'm watching his usage closely. It looks like Jordan Hicks is about toast. Birdsong did piggyback on him this last start and went three innings, but was not effective as well. You know, I'll be really worried in the next couple of days if Harrison just goes an inning or two. If he comes in relief and pitches three or four innings, I'll be much more optimistic about these next couple of weeks because they're stretching him out. So I think this rest of this week and the Friday, Saturday, Sunday games is going to be a key for these Kyle Harrison shares because I just, being a Buster Posey fan and knowing how he plays baseball the right way and running this team, I don't believe that he's going to put their top left-handed prospect in a middle relief role in without high leverage. I like what they're doing with Birdsong. I wish they gave him a rotation spot, but these high leverage seventh, eighth, ninth inning roles, he's been pretty valuable for them. Even he's going through a little funk right now, but you know, these are how kids used to develop too. I just don't think they want two of their highest profile arms in the bullpen. So if I had to guess, Hicks is going to move to the bullpen and Harrison's going to slide into a spot. And then the first injury would be Wisenhunt with Birdsong staying in the bullpen all year until next year.
Nice. I like that. I mean, so if you were to put it like on a date, you had to put like a over under on when Carson Wisenhunt would make his debut.
You know, you have you got injury. You have Layden Roop or Landon Roop that has not been that effective for the Giants. He's been a solid number five. I don't think he's going to get removed for unless he starts a Jordan Hicks route. You got Justin Verlander, who we know is not going to make 30 starts. So I would probably say Wisenhunt would be fill in for Verlander at some point, and then if he's effective, would knock Roop out of the rotation.
I like that, man. That makes a lot of sense to me. Last one I'll touch on. I am unfortunately, as always, going a little bit long on this section. We'll take it out of the others, but the Guardians, Ben Lively, off to the IL. And they're going to need a fifth starter. It's not going to be Joey Cantillo. He has been horrendous from like amazing. He's the next guy to like just back to sucking. But remember the name Colby Allard, the famous lefty, Phillies, Braves, always a tease. So he is right now penciled in for a rotation start. They're going to need a fifth guy. So far in five appearances, a lot of them in multi-inning, 15 innings, only six strikeouts to two walks. A 1.2 ERA, a 4.92 xFIP, and only a 7% swinging strike rate. There is him as an option, but there's also a chance that the man, the myth, the legend, Slay Ciccione, rejoins the rotation.
You just like saying his last name. That's a great last name and first name for that matter.
The best.
Yeah, I like your note in the outline here about Cantillo. He sucked, and that is very true. I actually stashed Cantillo 1 week when they sent him down to AAA, but they called him up, I think, 2 days later and put him back in relief for one inning, so I dropped him immediately. But yeah, he's really disappointing. I have Cantillo in a couple DCs. I thought he'd be a nice, sneaky strikeout play. I think the writing's on the wall. It's going to be Slade here coming up. Allard might get a start or two, but I think they put some trade capital into Slade Ciccione to get him. So I would believe he's kind of next in line after they give Allard a spot start.
All right. Some weekend matchups. My personal matchup of the week weekend is probably everyone's because it's Chris Sale returning to Boston to face the new Sale, Garrett Crochet. And by the way, subplot, Alex Verdugo's return to Boston.
Alex Verdugo is a subplot.
On his own.
Yeah, I mean, the two best lefties in the game, Chris Sale, Garrett Crochet. You know, Crochet just seems like a bigger, stronger version of Sale, but he hasn't learned to pitch, I think, as effectively as Sale. Sale's gotten a little unlucky, but he's really bouncing back. That is going to be a fascinating matchup, and I'm very excited to watch that one. Hopefully it is a pitching duel, but you know, these ones that get built up sometimes don't live up to billing, right?
Yeah, many times not. D-backs, the Diamondbacks going to play three games at home against the Rockies. They're in a bit of a crunch there with their lineup. And because you know, the Jordan Lawler thing, right? He's now here, but now what? He's going to play three, four times a week, they say. And it's going to be hard to start him in weekend matchups. Rust Resource has him in blue as a short side platoon bat. But I mean, they're facing three righties this week. I would like to start Jordan Lawler, but I mean, the matchups are great. You always play, you know, against the Rockies, but I don't know if I can do it because I mean, listen, Eugenio Suarez needs to play. Geraldo Perdomo needs to play. I mean, you know, where's the room?
Yeah, you know, I've been watching a lot about this, and you know, the guy is Pavin Smith at DH, but they got a nice little combo with him and Randall Grichuk. So I don't know what they're going to do. They, you know, they need to rest Marte because his lower body soreness. So he'll probably get at least one game. You know, probably sit Suarez one game and
play two.
Perdomo. Yeah, I would say two out of three. He's going to be a frustrating guy unless there's an injury, but the skills are there. Can he carry over the success from AAA not playing every day? That is a lot to ask of a young man to come up and not get every day at bats and to continue to be successful without getting a rhythm. So I'm not a fan of how the Diamondbacks are doing this, but there's a lot more smarter people than me running that organization. So maybe they are onto something.
Yeah, very smart organization. I agree. Dodgers, I'm going to be in a bit of a pickle here. I keep wanting to play Hyesung Kim. I knew going into this week that they were going to face a lot of lefties, and technically he's supposed to sit against them, but he's just been so darn effective, and Tommy Edman isn't coming back yet, and you know, Hyesung Kim has been playing more second base lately. The two games that the Dodgers had played against lefties, Hyesung Kim was not in the lineup. But they also can't continue to play. You mentioned Chris Taylor earlier. Can't continue to play him. You know, you just can't do the Miguel Rojas and Kike Hernandez, Chris Taylor thing all the time. This is getting old now. So I wonder if Hyesung Kim will get a start against the lefty this weekend. They're going to face a righty, and then they're going to get Tyler Anderson and Yusei Kikuchi, two lefties.
That's a big shock. The president of the fan club is pounding the table for him to bat against lefties. Wait, stay on brand there, Vlad. He will not be, in my opinion, starting against either of the lefties this week. The Dodgers are the Dodgers, and they're going to start their old veterans. That's why they have Kiki. That's why they have Chris Taylor on the roster, is to play against lefties. The one guy that's interesting a little bit is Max Muncy's really heating up. So he might get a little run against the lefties. I know he hit another homer tonight. So as much as I like Hyesung Kim too, because I did pick him up the week he was available, if I can, I am benching him this week, because he's probably only going to get one game, but maybe pinch hit and pinch run. So if you're in a pinch, it might not be the worst thing, but if I like chasing at bats more than guys on the bench.
Makes sense. Going to another level, this is the last note on the weekend matchups. Another level of analysis looking into stolen bases, right? You might feel like your team is shy on them. Your team's in the 30s and the 40s, but maybe you've got some Rays on your team. You got a Caballero. Maybe it's a deep league. You're usually stashing a Taylor Walls on the bench. Hey, this might be a good weekend to play your speed guys from the Rays. And of course, usually we're starting Chandler Simpson all the time. They are going to be playing their other team, the other team in Florida. They're going to play the Miami Marlins, who allow 1.6 stolen bases per game, which is about twice the major league average. Agustin Ramirez and hasn't, you know, sometimes plays catcher, but it's him or Nick Fortes or Liam Hicks. These guys just stink, and so they allow a lot of stolen bases. So that's just something to keep in mind. On the flip side, the St. Louis Cardinals speed guys may not be a good play. Like, I keep playing Victor Scott every weekend. The second, you know, Mason Winn, I pretty much play where I have him. But the Royals not only have the best ERA in the AL, but also allow the fewest stolen bases in the league. So do you ever go, like, you know, that level of analysis, or is this too early in the season for us to be, like, specifically categorizing like stolen bases?
No, I don't believe it's too early. And, you know, I'd probably be more profitable playing fantasy baseball if I did go this deep. So kudos to you for doing this research and sharing it. There is some value here. Again, I'm still more of an at bats guy at this point. So I'm not starting a stolen base guy instead of a guy getting at bats. The one guy on Tampa Bay I really am struggling with is Christopher Morel. I'm getting whipsawed by him. Every time I start him, he's sitting on the bench, not doing anything. And every time I bench him, he hits a homer and gets a steal. He seems to not be playing at all against right-handers. But then when he gets in there, you know, his WRC plus is over 100, but his strikeout rate's at 40. So, you know, and his projected WRC plus the rest of the year, I think, is 117. So, you know, the projections like him, but Tampa Bay seems to not like him very much. So I'm really struggling with that. You got a guy with a lot of position flexibility, but not a lot of at bat. So, I don't know what to do with him, but yeah, I mean, steals are the hot thing, and you need to accumulate them. So, if it's a tiebreaker, maybe this is the data you use to see who you're starting.
Yeah. And Jose Caballero's now, like, playing in the outfield. And so him and Taylor Walls are playing at the same time. A lot of times now, Travis Jankowski is on the IL. I think it opens up a little bit more, even though Josh Lowe is back, it still opens up kind of that consistent playing time for Caballero. So I do think he steals some bases this weekend. If you have him, I would play him with the St. Louis speed guys. I mean, you're kind of playing most of these guys anyways. And I mean, just because the Royals allow the least amount of stolen bases doesn't mean they can't give a couple up to a couple of the best base runners in baseball.
Yeah. Victor Scott's kind of been up and down this year. He's a fringe start. Mason Winn, if you have him, you're probably starting him in a 15, just because there's not enough options to bench someone with that profile.
All right, let's wrap things up here with a little fab. Just going to throw out some names. Let me know what you think. kind of focus on the 15 teamers right now. And of course, a lot of these guys will get bid upon in 12s as well. Ryan Weathers, we discussed. We talked about Clayton Kershaw. Obviously, Zebby Matthews and Logan Henderson, more so for 12 teamers. So let's talk about those guys. And then two catchers eligible, not even full-time guys. And maybe one of them doesn't even stick around for much longer. But Moises Ballesteros, the 21-year-old, I believe he's 21, for the Cubs. And Dalton Rushing is here. And he's going to play probably twice a week, one each series. And what do you feel about those catchers and the rest of those guys, pitchers we talked about?
I do like Ryan Weathers, as I mentioned earlier, but I'm hesitant on the Marlins, but I will be bidding on him. I doubt I'm anywhere near. I can see him going into the 200s pretty easily after that start on Wednesday. His metrics look really good too. Kershaw will be interesting just to get for the wins. The catchers, I believe at this moment, I need to do some research, but I'm going to be out on. Rushing only playing 2 days a week and having Otani at DH. I don't see Dave Roberts already said he's not playing the outfield. So you're getting a backup catcher with a lot of skills, but only getting 6 to 8 at bats a week. That's really tough. And Ballesteros, I doubt he stays up once Ian Happ comes back. He might do some DHing for a little bit. But, you know, with Carson Kelly being the world beater, you know, and Miguel Amaya being serviceable, I don't see a scenario where they keep him up. Do you have a different take on that?
No, I think Ballesteros is up here just for a bit of a cup of coffee. And it's interesting that, you know, it's funny how this works. Say Suzuki was pretty much, oh, we're going to lock him into DH all year. And all of a sudden he's been playing out in the field for the, you know, for the last 5 or 6 days.
Yeah, I guess it's good for us for next year for drafting Suzuki, because at least we won't have UT only eligibility. But hopefully he can stay healthy, because that's been his big bugaboo.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, Dalton Rushing's going to get bid attention and probably go for over $50 on average, especially if like he hits a home run this weekend. I haven't seen what he's done in this Thursday's game in his first start. But just because he's a Dodger and a catcher, people are going to be, you know, irrational about it. Some have been, you know, waiting for him for a while. So you'll see some of those bids, but it may not make all the best sense. But then again, listen, I had Drake Baldwin in my 15 team, you know, bid recommendations list last week, even as a backup catcher. And the guy's just been incredible. Is you know, just, I mean, listen, it's a rookie. They're going to be ups and downs. But you know, a lot of times a Drake Baldwin playing 2 or 3 times a week, sometimes is better than like, you know, a Connor Wong, or, you know, a few years ago used to be like Martin Maldonado, like, you know, sucking your average down to like a 130, you know, or like a Danny Jansen, just like, you know, making you want to just, you know, quit fantasy. So, yeah. You know, sometimes those things make sense.
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe you catch lightning in a bottle and Will Smith gets dinged up, or Carson Kelly gets dinged up, and the Dodgers are only winning 19-2 tonight. You know, they really had a poor offensive performance. Dalton Rushing has 2 hits and 4 at bats and scored 3 runs. So, and our boy Haesung Kim's got 4 runs, 3 hits and 3 at bats, a double, a steal. So the fan club continues. I actually am becoming the vice president of that, if you're okay with that.
Oh man, we in on this. That's my nephew, Haesung. Jordan Lawler, by the way, also he's going to be available in a lot of leagues. He's rostered in 39% of main events, obviously, in, you know, available in most 12 teamers. He's a guy to keep an eye out. I mean, I don't know. That's really it. Oh, the most important thing I forgot to mention, my first ever little preview for the Fab article. And actually I brought up this week 9 of the fantasy baseball season. I brought this up in spring. The best on paper schedule of all time is going to be this week. And they're going to get my first ever matchup grade of a 10. Out of 10 for the week in the Fab article, and that's the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies, check this, in week 9, and most of these guys are rostered, they got Colorado in Coors for 4 games, the Rockies for 4, and then the A's in Sacramento for 3.
And my boy JT Ginn.
Yes, watch out for that guy. Yeah, so that's a nice schedule there. I mean, Brandon Marsh is kind of really the only guy available in most leagues. Everyone else is pretty much rostered. But listen, if there's an Alec Baum or someone like that hanging out, make sure to snag them. Anything I missed? Anyone else? Oh, Jesus Tinoco, is he stealing that job? I don't know how closely you're paying attention to the, you know, Miami closers.
I have dabbled in that bullpen with Fauscher and Tinoco, and I had some Bender. I'm done with it. I'm done with it. You know, and then you have the Texas situation with Sean Armstrong getting the save today. With Luke Jackson and Chris Martin both being dinged up. Bochy came out tonight and said that they should be able to pitch tomorrow. So depending how they look in the weekend, it does not look like it's Robert Garcia, though. So for those stashing Garcia, including myself, he will be getting cut this weekend.
Yeah, top lefty in the pen. Really, really good, but not their guy. Armstrong's a little bit of experience, long time, guy in his 30s in the big leagues. Dan Thompson's the guy for that. The Bullpen Report does a great job with the weekly article, updating the charts every day, and then also a twice weekly podcast you can find right here. If you are subscribed to the podcast, you will probably get that on your feeds on Saturdays and Tuesdays, so make sure to check that out. I think we covered it, right? That's a pretty robust, probably over 100 players we talked about today.
Yeah. And, that Dan's podcast on Saturdays is a must listen for Fab now. Between Vlad's article and Dan's podcast on Saturday for the bullpen, it's been extremely helpful for Fab for me. So make sure you listen to that and obviously read Vlad's article. But great talking to you again, Vlad. I missed you last week. It's always good to chat some ball, and I'll look forward to next week as well.
For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.